Blog Talk Radio.
Rabel fires from deep and scores! Rabel for two!
It is Mundorf circling out in front. Vice on it. Shot to score!
It's Pro Lacrosse Faceoff, brought to you by LaxDirt.com with Tim Thomas and Tom Bovee. Breaking down all the best teams and players from Major League Lacrosse, the National Lacrosse League, the North American Lacrosse League, and International Lax. It's Pro Lacrosse Faceoff with Tim Thomas.
A lot of storylines to talk about.
And Tom Bovee.
I mean, how good are they if that's going to be the case?
It's Pro Lacrosse Faceoff.
It's a great experience for the fans.
On TNT Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome into the Pro Lacrosse Faceoff. I had to break out the old introduction because the A-team is back together tonight. Tim Thomas and Tom Bovee getting set to break down the All-Star matchup. The roster was announced today, so we will go through that. We have a number of great guests lined up, a couple members of that player pool that we're going to talk to. So thank you guys for tuning in tonight on MLL Radio as well as the Laxworm Experience. Mr. Bovee, we got our first look at that all-star roster, that group of the player pool that's going to make up the all-star game this year. What was your initial reaction when you saw that list?
One, there's 41 players. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting 40, you know, a nice round number to split between two teams, but 41, that works just as well. I think we saw a lot right, but, you know, short stick defensive midfielders are always the guys who we always say get no credit in the league, and there isn't a true full-time short stick defensive midfielder on this roster. And that's tough to take. But on the flip side, they got closer than I expected. How about that? How about that for the politically correct answer?
And I agree with you. And you know, when you and I were trading texts earlier this morning when the list came out, that's what I was saying. I think they got it pretty close. I mean, it's not like some of the years past when I think there were they missed quite a bit. I think they were much closer this year to what I was thinking in my head. We're going to get the opportunity to speak to a couple guys who got the nod for this All-Star game in Texas. Kyle Harrison of the Ohio Machine in just a few minutes, as well as Craig Bunker of the Boston Cannons, one of the four face-off men that are going to participate in this All-Star game. So excited to talk to both of those guys. Now, I asked you this morning, and there's always the first thing that people always talk about is who's your snubs. And I saw general manager of the Boston Cannons, Kevin Barney, tweeting out about snubs earlier today. When I look at this list, and, you know, obviously it's tough. There's schedules that have to be worked around. There's some guys, and you and I have talked about this on the air in the past, some guys that schedule certain events on this weekend because it's not a guarantee that you're going to be an all-star, and this isn't a guaranteed weekend that you're going to be playing. So there's always scheduling issues. Sometimes players are not available. But when I looked at these rosters, this list, the name that jumped out at me and the first one that I thought of as a potential snub was Brian Phipps of the Ohio Machine. He's a guy that you know, Joe Keegan, our colleague at LaxDirt, has talked a lot about this season. You have talked about him in some of your articles. And really, I think he's a guy that's having an all-star caliber season, and it surprised me that he wasn't on this list, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. He belongs. He absolutely does. I had a, and I've repeated the sentiment I received from an MLL insider, I guess is the best word I can use, is that Schwartzman made it because of the helmet he wears, not because of the way he's played. Phipps is top four in all goalies in every stat. Yeah, he would be the machine's defensive MVP, if not actual MVP, if the season ended today. He's played tremendously well. Schwartzman, well, let's go down to the numbers that matter for a goalie. Phipps has 100 saves. Schwartzman has 84. Phipps has a 54% save percentage. Schwartzman has 47.7. Yeah, he's just been better. And the two faced off this past week, and Phipps ended up being the player of the game. There's always going to be the popular vote. I mean, we saw it a few years ago. Joe Von Miller and Billy Bitter were both all-stars in the season where their numbers did not call for that. And Phipps lost out to a guy who has more name recognition than him, but that he has outperformed this season. It's going to happen. We've got about four guys on this roster that were question marks and maybe could have been replaced with someone else. But at the same time, you know, they put together a great roster, a ton of offense, a ton of it's going to be a track meet. It really is. The deep holes they have can all score. There's transition for days on this roster, and we've got shooters upon shooters upon shooters. And you add in a goalie like Schwartzman, and we could see a record number of goals set for one team in a half.
And we've talked about in the past as well that, you know, a lot of times this all-star game nowadays is being used as a marketing device. It's being used as a selling point. And sometimes because of that, you get a couple players that have the marquee value and can put butts in the seats, especially when you're going to an out-of-market location for a game like this. So that has to be taken into account. I agree with you about the rosters. I think there's potential there for a high-scoring game, and there's a lot of talent. Obviously, it's an all-star game the way it should be. One of the other things that jumped out at me was the four face-off guys, and obviously Greg Gerenlian has been the top of the heap, and you have talked about him a couple weeks running now in your weekly odds article up on Laxdirt. And then you have Anthony Kelly, who has been kind of the 1A at the face-off X this season. But Fowler and Bunker both getting the nods. Two young guys, in a sense, Fowler in his second year, Bunker in his first year as a full-time starter. He's had opportunities to start in the past, both for Boston and Rochester. But this is the first year where he's kind of been handed over the reins. And it's the first year that Timmy Fallon isn't there in Charlotte. And Fowler has kind of been handed over the reins as well. So your thoughts when you saw this group of face-off guys all getting the nod?
Well, I think if you ask the face-off guys about this, they wanted this as much as anybody. This is a game that we see a ton of face-offs in. And you know, Kelly and Gerenlian last year just beat the tar out of each other, and you end up seeing everybody else taking face-offs the whole fourth quarter. It's kind of the coaches turning around saying, who can go? You know, do we got anybody that can win this? And you know, that's not what's best for the game or for the fans. Grab an extra face-off guy, get him out there, and, you know, if any of these guys have to run a defensive shift or two just to get some miles on, they will. I mean, they're not afraid to. And, you know, Kelly can play some offense. Bunker can play some defense. They'll have some fun with this. And, you know, it'll keep the face-offs moving versus having, you know, a guy like Jordan McIntosh go out there and take the last five face-offs for his team because his face-off guy is so worn out. The last thing you want to see is an injury.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to talk about. And you mentioned how Anthony Killian and the Beast beat the bag out of each other in the last All-Star game. And they did. They pounded on each other repeatedly over and over again. We saw when you and I were down in Charlotte as well, the face-off guys just pounding on each other. And this is kind of a precaution, in a sense, in my mind. It's a great move. You get another roster spot on the All-Star game for a face-off guy, and everybody knows me. I'm always pulling for that position and for those guys to get a little bit more shine and a little bit more credit than they necessarily do. But this way, you're going to limit the potential for injuries in what is honestly an exhibition game. The All-Star game is an exhibition game. It doesn't count towards the standings. And one of the things you've mentioned a couple times, Tom, on this program, I think I heard you say it last week when you were talking with James, is, you know, an injury to a guy like Greg Gerenlian is probably the only thing that's going to derail a team like the Lizards at this point, is a big-time injury like that. And I think having a backup at a position like that limits situations like that, especially with, you know, two older guys like Anthony Kelly and Greg Gerenlian that got as good as they are, and they are the two best in the business right now. They've got a lot of miles on the treads, and those aren't, you don't want to risk having a guy like the A-Train or like the Beast getting banged up in an All-Star game and it hurting them going into the second half of the season. So I think it was a great move by Major League Lacrosse to add two more face-off guys to the All-Star game, not only to give a couple guys an opportunity that they wouldn't necessarily have had a few years ago, but for the safety of all the players there, because this is an exhibition game. This is a game that is supposed to showcase this amazing product that you and I love, Tom, and that Major League Lacrosse fans love. And hopefully everybody gets out of there and nobody gets nicked up. So I think it was a smart move. Now, moving on from that little rant, I want to welcome in our first guest to the program, a gentleman who's going to have an opportunity to go out and showcase this great sport of Major League Lacrosse out there in Texas, the Ohio Machine's Kyle Harrison. Mr. Harrison, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
Hi, how you doing? Not doing too bad. Not doing too bad. Just kind of finishing up for the day. What are we at, 8 p.m. now, I think? Something like that.
Yeah, right around. So
yeah, I just came. I used to live in California, and I just moved back to the East Coast. I'm still trying to get adjusted to my times here.
You haven't caught up with that 3 hours yet, huh?
No, not yet. Not yet.
So we're at the midpoint of the season, just about,
yep.
And you're sitting there with this Ohio Machine team that you had a ton of success with last year, and you guys
yep.
are right in the thick of it, in this clump in second place with teams like Boston and Denver and Rochester. And
sure.
How has this season to this point been different than it was last year when you and guys like Pete were coming back in for the first time in a few years? How has this year been different?
You know, I think this year for us, we've, myself, Phipps and Marcus as the captains of the team, we've tried to really focus on not talking too much about last year and the success that we had, only because you don't want to get complacent. You don't want to compare everything to what happened last year. It's a different team, different season, clearly with the same goal of winning a championship. So for us, it's just been about playing well and playing a game completely through at all facets. So playing well on the defensive side of the ball, clearing the ball, playing well, playing good offense. And that doesn't necessarily mean scoring goals, but that means getting everybody involved. You know, I think we have a bunch of guys on the offensive side of the ball that are all capable of huge numbers. But I think if you've looked the past few games, everybody's kind of touching the ball. Everybody's just kind of, no one cares who gets credit as long as the ball goes in the back of the net. And then Greg at the faceoff X has really given us a jump start because he's getting us so many possessions. So I think for us, man, it's been about playing well all over the field and making sure both offensively, defensively, competing between the lines and facing off well.
Now, that you mentioned Greg, and I got to ask you, since you're in that locker room, and I'm going to be calling the games on the radio when you're up here in Boston, how
sure.
do you pronounce that young man's last name?
Oh, gosh, I'm not going to butcher it on the radio. I'm not sure. Your best bet there is giving him a call, and he'll give you the exact pronunciation. But I've heard it pronounced a couple times, and I definitely don't want to butcher it.
Well, as a captain, I'm giving you the job of coming up with a nickname for this young man so that we can have an easier way moving forward.
I'm on it.
Now, the All-Star rosters get announced, and
sure.
your name makes the list, along with a number of your teammates. And what is that like for you? Obviously, you've been around the block. You've been in All-Star games before. What is it like to be at this point in your career and still being named to an All-Star game like that?
You know, it's an incredible opportunity, right? It's an honor to be listed with the group of guys that are a part of the All-Star game this year. I think for me, you know, you hit the nail on the head. As a guy that's certainly closer to the end of my career than the beginning of my career, I'm just happy to be a part of it. And like I said at the beginning of our call here, you know, my goal coming into this year with the Ohio Machine was to win a championship, and still is to win a championship, and everything else that happens along the way, I'm certainly going to be happy and thankful for. And so the All-Star game certainly falls under that umbrella. But my goal is still to win a championship this year.
And I think kind of for at least while you're still with the Ohio Machine and this is still developing, I think you're always kind of going to be connected with Peter Baum in a lot of ways. You guys both spend time together in the LXM. You have kind of that mentor role with Pete. And I want to ask you, from your perspective, how have you seen his game develop coming into the MLL?
Oh, man. I mean, Pete is just scratching the surface for how good he's going to be. You know, there's, in my opinion, when it comes to shooting the ball on the run at full speed, I haven't seen many guys do it the way Peter does it, from his release to how quickly he's moving while he does it, how quickly the shot gets off. You know, it's pretty impressive. So, you know, I think this season Pete's done a great job of continuing to get to the goal and doing what he does from that point of view. But he's also done a great job of drawing slides and getting the ball out of his stick and then getting the ball to the backside, clearly through steal or someone else, and us getting a step down just from Pete's original dodge. So I think over the next few years, man, he's going to just turn into an absolute monster, and he's going to be even better than he already is. And that's saying a lot because he was all MLL last year. So, you know, he's a talented kid and a hardworking kid, and he loves it. And I'm just I'm excited to watch him continue to progress.
And last one for me, and I'll let Tom jump in. You guys get the win over Denver and even the season series with them last week. Looking ahead at your schedule, you guys kind of are in a little bit of the driver's seat because you still got two games against Rochester. You've still got two games against Boston. So both those tiebreakers are still up in the air with teams that you're tied with. Now, obviously, it's 1 week at a time. But what's the overall feel in that locker room from you guys and where you stand right now in the standings?
Yeah, well, you know, the one area that we do, you know, kind of talk about last year in our team is the fact that what that group did last year, especially the second half of the season, was we just took it one game at a time. We didn't look ahead. We didn't even talk about the end of the game. We took it literally 4 minute spans at a time. And for us, that allowed us to really focus on the task at hand and instead of worrying about the future. So I think for us, you know, as we move into the second half of this season, it's about playing each game and going out and trying to execute and play good lacrosse all over the field at every facet of the game. And if we do that, we feel pretty comfortable and we feel pretty confident in our ability to get out of there with wins. So that's kind of where our focus is, making sure we go into every single game and perform at the highest level possible all over the field on all sides of the ball and then just live with the results.
Hey, Kyle, it's Tom. Congrats on the All-Star nod.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm not going to look that far ahead yet, though. You got a game this weekend against Charlotte. I know you. I know you didn't want to compare this year to last year, but you started 1-3, same as last year. Now you've gone on a three-game run. How? I mean, you've done the exact same thing you did last year, with the offense kind of coming together and everything looking good. But how has it been? You know, how do you prepare for the next game against the struggling Charlotte team when you are kind of on a roll?
Right. Well, you know, I think the truth of the matter is every team in the MLL is capable of beating any other team. That's just how it is. There's so much talent on every team that whoever shows up and is more prepared and gets after it more, that's the team that's usually going to win. And again, no matter what records are, any team can beat any team on any given night in this league because of how small it is. So, you know, while I understand Charlotte's had a couple tough ones in a row, we certainly aren't overlooking them. They got a bunch of talent around there and guys that are capable of making big plays on both sides of the ball. So for us, it's about continuing to play good lacrosse, like I said, offensively continuing to share the ball. Greg continuing to do a great job at the faceoff X. You know, Phipps has been incredible for us in goal this season, just making some huge stops that really swing momentum. And then defensively, you know, continue to do our job.
And, you know, two games ago, you lit up the two-point line. You just started firing. Your veteran presence, you know, a guy who's seen the two-point line for a number of years. When you line up to take that shot, is it one of those things that you know you've got that range, or are you just thinking, you know, there's a chance this is going to go in, so I'm going to rip it?
Honestly, it all depends on the shot. There's certainly sometimes that you just throw it up and you pray that it goes in. You know, but for me, if you watch the past few years, a handful of my goals have been, you know, with a foot over the line or pretty close to the line, but being a one-pointer. So, you know, coach over the offseason certainly told me to, as I'm working on my own and as I'm putting the reps in, make sure that I, you know, if I could back up a half a step, that would be a two-pointer instead of a one-pointer. And then actually, you know, the week where I was able to score a couple, we actually for the first time practiced two-pointers the night before, just catching them and stepping down into it. And so, you know, in that game, I think it was against Florida, I caught two that just happened to be the exact same spot that we had practiced the night before, and I felt pretty confident and comfortable taking the shots, and was fortunate enough to put them in the goal. And great feed. I think Tom threw me one, which was perfect at the beginning of the game, and then I think I actually caught one coming out of the box, and nobody stepped up. So just stepped into it and, again, was fortunate for it to go in.
And I'm going to go back to last year again, despite your request not to.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Last year, you almost made it to the top of the mountain. You got to the playoffs after a huge turnaround. What makes this year's team better than last year's?
You know, I think I can't tell you yet because we're in the middle of it. And I think last year's team, we were so close, but you know, we had a problem throughout the season. We just didn't finish things. You know, we would play two good quarters or play a good half a quarter and then let a team come back, and that happened a lot. If you look at the film, we would give up goals at the end of halves, or goals at the end of quarters, and things of those nature, or things of that nature. And as a result, I think that last Rochester game semifinals was kind of a microcosm of our team last year. You know, we went up, if I remember correctly, I want to say 6-1, maybe 5-1, 6-1, one of the two. But we were up, you know, by 4 or 5 goals. And you know, in an MLO game, that's nothing. You know, you guy can step into a two-pointer, win a face-off, step into another one, and they're right back in that game. So for us, if we would have kept our foot on the gas pedal there and we would have kind of finished that game, you know, maybe we're in the championship game and competing for the cup. So for us, this year has been more about just finishing everything we do. You know, I think it was important last week in Denver. If you look at our Denver game last year at Denver and our Denver game this year at Denver, there was a huge difference. You know, last year we went up by 3. I think it was in the fourth quarter we went up by 3. Kind of took our foot off the gas pedal, and all of a sudden, you know, I think if I remember correctly, Junior scored a big one, and then he came down, had a big assist, and all of a sudden we're in a dogfight, and we end up losing. You know, I think we lost by 2 in the final seconds there, but you rewind to last weekend, and we were able to get up by a couple and then keep the run going and staying with it, as opposed to kind of getting complacent and taking your foot off the gas. So I think that's where this team thus far has been different from last year's team.
Nice. You're an ambassador of the game. You pioneered the LXM. You've played in just about every city that's actually hosted an MLL game or a professional game.
Yeah.
Where in your mind is the next expansion?
Oh, man, I have no idea. I'm so out of the loop in terms of what the MLL is planning on doing, but there are tons of great spots. You know, I know Houston's been in the discussion. I know Atlanta has been in the discussion. You know, I'm still a big advocate. You know, I'm living out on the West Coast for 6.5 years. I still think Orange County, California is the perfect spot. You know, for I played for the Riptide, and we would play our games at Home Depot up in Carson, which is in L.A., and, you know, the fans weren't great. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. And then we played the last game in franchise history in Orange County and just packed the whole stadium out. You know, Orange County, lacrosse is so big in Orange County, California, that would certainly get my vote if I could throw a vote in on where the next team should go.
And last one for me, and we'll let you go.
Sure.
You've been known for throughout your entire career for your first step. You know, everybody
yeah.
says he's got such a quick first step. At this point in your career, who's got a quicker first step, you or Jimmy Daly?
Oof. Gosh, well, you know what? That's a tough question, because I'll give Jimmy Daly the change of direction. I have seen a lot of guys play over the past 15 years or so, and Jimmy Daly, as far as his ability to stop and go another direction, is right up there with some of the quickest I've ever seen. You know, Mikey Powell to this day is the quickest lacrosse player I've ever seen in my entire life. And Jimmy Daly is not far behind in terms of his ability to stop and go the other direction. I don't have that. I think if I tried to stop like that, both my ankles would roll over and I'd fall.
Well, Mr. Harrison, we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us tonight. Good luck this weekend, and good luck out there in Texas in the All-Star game.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a great night.
All right, everybody. That was Kyle Harrison of the Ohio Machine. If you haven't had the opportunity to meet him and you have the opportunity to be out in Texas for this All-Star game, make sure you say hello. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met in terms of the sport of lacrosse. And that's saying something, because the sport of lacrosse is full of nice guys, Tom. But Kyle Harrison, you said it, is an ambassador, is just an all-around nice guy, and the type of guy that will sit there and you know, go back and forth with you and just talk and have fun with it.
Yeah, that's what this sport is all about. It's tough not for me not to say that I love this game so much, as much as I do, because of the guys. They are incredible, and that's one of the best parts about MLL. The action on the field is tremendous. It's unparalleled. There's no other sport that I get as jacked up about when I watch and scream at the TV and holler and yell things. But on the flip side, if you ever get a chance to meet, 99.5% of these players are absolutely first-class guys and literally would give you the shirt off their back.
And again, Harrison, a little bit of the fanboy in me. You know, he's a guy that a lot of people didn't know if he was going to be able to step back into the MLL. A lot of people didn't know if, you know, after having so much time off and playing in the LXM, where, you know, let's be honest, the defense wasn't quite what it is in the MLL. They didn't know whether or not he was going to be able to step back in and hit the ground running, and myself included. I'm not excluding myself from that group. And he's gone out and he's proved the naysayers wrong, and he's proved that he can still compete at this level. He can still be an X factor and take a game over at times. You mentioned the 2-point goals a couple weeks ago. He said that he's closer to the end than he is the beginning of his career, and I think there's no question that that's true. But at least to this point and the last 2 years since returning to Major League Lacrosse, he's been entertaining to watch, and he's shown that not only that he belongs, but that he can compete at the highest level with all these young midfielders out there and these young guys fighting for those spots and fighting for those all-star spots.
Absolutely. And the thing that we don't see every day, the stats are there, the ability's there, everything is there with him, but the thing we don't see is the off-field leadership and the things he does in the huddle that, you know, when they go into a TV timeout, it's incredible. And he is their leader. He is their captain. If they had to pick a solo captain, I have no doubt in my mind it would have been him.
No question about it. We're going to take our first commercial break. On the other side, we're going to talk to the Boston Cannons face-off specialist midfielder Craig Bunker. So quick commercial break. We will be right back with Craig Bunker from the Boston Cannons. You're listening to the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off on MLL Radio and the Laxworm Radio Experience. Don't go anywhere.
I'm Steele Stanwyck of the Ohio Machine, and you're listening to MLL Radio.
Are you tired of the same generic recycled pro lacrosse coverage? Check out LaxDirt.com. All the latest headlines, news, and analysis with no punches pulled. The latest coverage of Major League Lacrosse, the National Lacrosse League, and International Lax. One of the most active social media presences on Facebook, Twitter, and LaxDirt keeps you up to date on everything happening in pro lacrosse. LaxDirt.com, your source for all the dirt on Pro Lax.
Welcome back to the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off, Tim Thomas and Tom Bovey. I want to welcome in one of my favorite players in Major League Lacrosse, Mr. Craig Bunker. Bunk, welcome to the show. Congratulations on the All-Star nod. How are you?
Hey, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So let's jump right into it. Your first full season as the starter for the Boston Cannons, the first time you've kind of had to bear the full load in your MLL career. You had some time with Rochester. You had some time where you were splitting time with Chris Eck and backing up for Chris Eck with Boston. What has this process been like through the first half of the season, having to bear the load yourself and getting that opportunity to show what you can do?
It's been an incredible experience. I have a ton of respect for Chris Eck, and I think my style right now is the way it is because of Chris. So I think all those couple of years, practices, games, going against Chris really prepared me for the opportunity to be a full-time starter in the MLL. I mean, I've been ecstatic about it every week. I'm at work Monday, and all I can think about is my flight out Saturday and the games Saturday, Sunday night. So it's been an incredible experience so far, and the All-Star game has definitely topped it all at this point.
And you've had to kind of go up against some of the best out there right out of the gate. I mean, starting out the season, you get Anthony Kelly, and then you get Brendan Fowler, who's taken the league by storm at the X. You go back-to-back weeks against the Lizards where you had to face Jerry Raganese, and then you had to face Greg Gerenlian. So you've definitely had to face the top guys and all those guys that are going to be out in Texas with you. In your mind, which one is the toughest matchup for your style personally?
That's tough. I mean, they're all have their own strengths, and they're all obviously incredible face-off guys. Anthony and Greg have been very, very successful for many years. Salard has to be the top up-and-coming face-off guy. He's easily within discussion of the top three. To say who is the toughest, I guess for me, my hand speed probably lacks or is slower than most guys in the league, and I just thought Greg had some of the fastest hands. I mean, the way he reacts to the whistle, that's really impressive. So I guess from a pure hand speed aspect, I'd go with Greg, but, you know, Fowler at the same time probably is the best athlete of any faceoff I've ever gone against. Testament to his career playing football at Duke, wrestled at Duke. The kid can recover from any situation. He's in every single play because of the athleticism. You know, Anthony Kelly is just a veteran. He knows what he's doing out there. Him and his wings have a good 3-4 years together, and that unit's always firing on all cylinders. So, yeah, they all have their own strengths, and it does not make it easy every week.
And you guys are sitting now with 4 wins. You're at the middle of the midway point of the season, and you're locked in this pack at 4-3 with Ohio and Rochester and Denver. Now, a certain analyst and radio personality who will remain nameless picked you guys to only win 4 games this season. How much of a chip on your shoulder has this Boston Cannon team had with a lot of people not sure what to expect with all the moves that were made in the offseason?
I think the coaching staff did a good job of letting us know what people thought of us. I think naturally the guys on their own did reading and they saw what all these different analysts would say. And to be completely honest with you, a lot of the analysis the team earned in the offseason was justified. I mean, think of the moves we made, the players that decided to retire. It was very easy to look at our roster and say, you know what, this team – you know, lost a lot of people, has a lot to replace, a lot of question marks. We definitely have a chip on our shoulder. We're a young team. We're hungry. The energy and the enthusiasm that we bring to practice, to games, I think all of that has helped us. And we know we have an uphill battle. We know winning the amount of games we have so far, it's a great accomplishment. But by no means are we done. By no means are we satisfied. And we want to be the best team standing at the end of the season.
And a couple weeks ago, I was calling the game in Boston. You got to break out and score in that game. And I talked to a couple other face-off guys and a couple of the guys in the league. I want to get your perspective from it as a guy that used to run midfield shifts in college and converted to a full-time face-off guy in the MLL. How much anticipation is there on a play like that where you get free and your eyes are focused on that goal and you're looking and thinking that you're going to have the opportunity to get the hands free and get a shot off?
Yeah, so it's funny because typically the first fast break opportunity I get in a game, that's where I try to feel out what the defense is going to do. For me, you know, my job is strictly to win the face-off, get it to the offense. So I'm trying to get down the field, make a pass, get it to Davey Emla, get it to Will Manny, Ryan Young, let those guys make the decision to score the goal. So the first time in every game, first fast break in a game, I'm typically trying to see what the defense does and make the right decision, get the ball out of my stick, and let those offensive skill guys go to work. Then at a certain point when you get the next opportunity, you can kind of tell, okay, the defense isn't going to slide. They're not really going to respect me. I'm just going to take it to the rack. And I think by the time you get to the two-point arc, you can tell if no one's coming. At that point, they're trying to hedge. They're trying to make you pass the ball. But by the two-point line, you're kind of blinders on. I'm going all in as hard as I can. Your eyes definitely light up. Try to be savvy with the stick and with ball placement, but sometimes when you're running full speed, knowing you have the two wings hot on your tail, it can be tough to put some finesse or some savviness into the shot. But if you can get it by the goalie, it's a pretty incredible feeling.
And last one for me, and I'll let Tom jump in here. You mentioned the wings, and you're a team that has utilized a lot of different guys on the wings. It's been clear that Coach Tucker isn't afraid to mix and match when it comes to the guys that are going to be on either side of you. And how difficult is that for you as a face-off guy where you have to kind of look side to side and see who's lined up with you? It's not the same two guys every time.
Yeah, so far this year, I think Scott Ratliff has taken, from the long stick position, has taken every single draw. I mean, that kid, he came into camp the best shape I'd ever seen him. He's been an absolute monster on the defensive side, between the lines, on the offensive side. He's been one of the top 2-point shooters in the league. So his presence and his skill on the wing has absolutely been instrumental to my success this year. And I tell him every day, you save my butt week in, week out. Now for our shorties, yeah, we have had a bunch of different guys take reps. But I think the rotations that we have is a true testament to the trust that the coaching staff has. We have a game plan every week at the Faceoff X, and we make sure it's communicated to each wing guy, whether it's Brent Adams, Max Sebald, Tyler Durham, Eric Smith. Those guys know what to do, and I feel very comfortable each time. I always want a great athlete, someone who's quick off the whistle, who's very explosive, who's very fast, and also is a vacuum in their stick. Those are the guys I want on the wing, and to be honest with you, all four or five of the guys, short sticks we have out there every week, fit that mold. So for me, I never worry about the guys out there. I know that they can do their job.
Hey, Bunk, it's Tom. Congrats on the All-Star nod.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We kind of talked today and have talked more or less every day for a long time. It's gone full circle. Last time we spoke to you, you were waiting for a supplemental draft, hoping to get picked, and you talked to a few teams. Now you're with that team. You've been protected a couple of times, and you're a starter and an All-Star. How is that journey?
It's difficult to have imagined. I remember going in my senior year of college. I said I'd had success the first 2.5-3 years of college. I thought, you know, maybe I'll get a shot. I think if I could get to a training camp, I could have some success. And no luck in the collegiate draft. And you know, getting that chance in Rochester and the supplemental, the 2012 season. You know, all that happened just in a whirlwind, the way it kind of all fell into place. And, you know, from to think back that first training camp in Rochester when I was a completely different athlete and face-off guy then than I am now, you know, it's a pretty incredible journey. And it's one that, you know, hasn't been easy. A lot of lack of sleep, and you got to say goodbye to friends, family, things like that. But it's one that I would do, you know, 100 out of 100 times. I wouldn't change it.
And you knew before the season, before most people knew that Eck was going to be done, that he wasn't going to play this season. How was it for you to have the coaches go through the draft, go through the supplemental draft, and not really bring in a guy to compete against you for the job with the confidence they had in you?
Yeah, that was all interesting. So I think the timeline of events was, I can't remember now. I'd have to look back, but I think the supplemental draft took place and Eck was still on the roster. And then I even think with the collegiate draft, Eck might have been on the roster as well. I remember getting an email from Eck announcing his retirement or break from lacrosse from the MLL, and I called Coach Tucker just kind of saying, Coach, I'm ready. I'm excited for the opportunity. Thanks for the trust. And you know, he reciprocated. We expect big things from you. You've worked hard. We know you're still working hard. Right away, I think it was about midnight when we had that conversation, I was ready to go hit the gym, go for a run, take some faces. I didn't know what to do. I was ready to step in the field right then. So, I mean, it means a lot that they put that trust in me. You know, it is a big position, and every single week, every single face-off guy is very strong. They're there for a reason. So I've worked hard. I've loved being a part of this team, and it meant a lot for the team to feel that same way about me. And they showed that by giving me the opportunity to compete week in, week out.
And you get to go against the best team in the MLL this coming weekend, and a guy you're incredibly familiar with in John Ortolani. And you talked all about your unit, and now you're going against a unit that's also very talented. How do you prepare for a team like Rochester?
Yeah, they have a young team, a team that's also very close-knit. The guys in that locker room all really care about each other. So it's definitely going to be an uphill battle, even though we did come away with a victory that first week, or that's the first game against them. It went in overtime. It wasn't easy. So, fortunately, I've known John Ortolani for I guess since 2008. I remember going into my freshman year of college, I worked with him once or twice, and since then we've coached together every single summer or every single winter up until now. And their unit, I mean, I played with Drill White. Everyone knows the tremendous athlete and stick that Drill White has. And I think their other wing, Lacasio, another incredible athlete. So we definitely have our work cut out for us. Once again, the wings we have, you know, I'll take them any single day. They fight hard for me. Those guys are great athletes. Ratliff has been easily the top long stick in the league, in my opinion, this season thus far. And, you know, we got some great short stick athletes on the wing who I mentioned earlier. So it's going to be a tough battle. Ordo is 100% healthy. He wasn't earlier this season. He'll be the only guy taking draws. So it'll be fun matching up against him. We always talk how our battles are just smashing heads for 60 minutes. You know, by the end, I'm easily the most sore after going against John Orlani. So we need a great game for myself, from the face-off unit, and, you know, even offense and defense.
And yeah, it's a battle, and it's even tougher when you guys are familiar with each other and obviously have great players on the wing. Last one for me, and we will let you go. You've had a storied career. Obviously, you know, you were one of the best athletes to ever come out of Cabrini, and you've made it this far, became a starter, earned it every step of the way. Is getting the All-Star nod, is when you fielded that phone call from the MLL office, is that the highlight so far?
It's a tough one. That was obviously a special moment when they called Colin from the MLL office, called me and at work, and I thought it might have been a joke, or I definitely was taken aback and shocked by it, obviously incredibly honored, but I'm thinking, how did this kid from a small D3 school in Maine get to this point? For me, the highlight of my career so far has been getting to play with the Boston Cannons week in and week out. I mean, that's been an incredible opportunity. Obviously, the All-Star game caps it all off. But at the same time, you know, I'm still incredibly hungry. I still think I have a lot to prove. I know this week that I have a huge matchup against John Orlani, and that I need to work my butt off. I need to put in the work tonight at the gym. So I was there for 2 hours. I'm going to need to run tomorrow. I'm going to need to hit the gym again on Thursday. So even with these recent successes, you know, I can't rest on my laurels. I'm still trying to prove to myself that I can be, you know, a successful face-off guy this level. And, you know, maybe the All-Star game, to some people can prove, hey, you know what, Craig, you've done a good job. But to me, you know, I'm still incredibly hungry, still trying to prove that I've earned the right to be here.
Well, Mr. Bunker, we appreciate you taking the time out to join us here on the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And again, congratulations on the All-Star nod. Congratulations on the season so far. And good luck up there in Rochester this weekend.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Love the work you do, as always. And appreciate all the support and having me on tonight.
Always a pleasure, everyone. That was Craig Bunker from your Boston Cannons. I love the way you slide in the best team in the MLL when you talk about playing against the Rochester Rattlers, Tom, which will segue perfectly into what I want to discuss next, and it's that clump that's in second place, because I disagree with you. I think the way things are shaping up right now, I think out of the teams that are in that clump, I would probably put Rochester third in terms of where they're situated and what they've done to this point, because you look at Boston, and Boston has already gone out and beat Rochester, and they've beat Denver, who are two of the teams that they're tied with. Ohio, like I said, still has two matchups up in the air with Rochester, as well as two up in the air with Boston. So they've got a clean slate in terms of the teams that they're tied with. Rochester, in my mind, has they've played well to this point, don't get me wrong, but I think they've got an uphill battle. I think two matchups against Ohio, another one against Denver, and one against Boston, all right in a row, we're going to find out pretty quickly whether Rochester's a playoff team or not.
Yeah, I'm gonna exercise my bias as often as possible, so I'm not afraid to do that. We will still find out who this team is. They lost to Boston in overtime. I can live with that. It's early enough in the season. I think they're a team that still has a ways to go. They still have yet to really play a game with a full roster. This past weekend, they won in Chesapeake without John Galloway and obviously what he brings to that squad. So I'm not too worried about Rochester. If I was going to pick one of those squads that I would put in second place right now, it probably would be Ohio because of the way they have played. And maybe it's history. Maybe I'm giving them credit for last season, but they're incredibly talented. But I don't think we've seen Rochester play their best yet, and I think that moment is going to come. I think they're a better built team than they were last year. And as long as they can stay healthy and continue to have the drive and the energy that they've played with, I think they'll be just fine going forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're certainly talented enough. This team is incredibly stacked, and Jordan Wolfe has been phenomenal. John Galloway has been phenomenal, and this is a team that has all the potential in the world. And like I said, it's laid out for them in the next, you know, month or so, where they're going one after another with the teams that they're knotted up in second place with. You know, Boston, Denver, Ohio, back to back, and right then, I mean, that's your season if you're Rochester. You know, those four games right there are pretty much going to tell you where this team is going to end up standing. And, you know, we're at that point in the season where that's what we're going to start looking at, especially when you've got teams knotted up so tightly. And we talk every week about the New York Lizards and how dominant that team is and how talented that team is. And it's got to the point where, you know, I've made it a foregone conclusion that the New York Lizards are going to be in the playoffs. So I'm looking at that next tier already. I know that's crazy to say at the halfway point in the season, but I have already punched New York's ticket for them. I know Joe Spallina would never do that, but I have. So I'm looking at that next tier. And you look at the team that you and I disagree that we think Ohio is probably that next team, the second place team. But, you know, if you play the game where one of these things is not like the other, in my mind, it's the Denver Outlaws. And I know that's weird to say because that's a team that has been so good for so long and is always a perennial contender. But I look at this Denver team and I watch them week in and week out. And even with John Grant Jr. coming back and being John Grant Jr. and looking outstanding, the team still doesn't amaze me. And you look at them and you know, I lump them in the same category with Chesapeake almost, because Chesapeake wins the games they're supposed to win and loses the games when they're going against what I consider to be the teams battling for that second place matchup. And you know, other than the early win against Ohio, and even that was a nail-biter, I haven't really seen Denver look dominating like I'm accustomed to Denver looking, Tom.
Denver's tough. Denver's a tough team to gauge because they haven't looked great. I think Schwartzman's been off. I alluded to that in the beginning of the segment or the beginning of the show. And I think the Lee Zink retirement has impacted them far beyond the any other player movement in the offseason. The Paul Rabil trade, maybe that impacted New York positively. It doesn't appear to have hurt Boston as bad as I definitely thought it would. But Lee Zink was more to this team than just a guy with a long pole. He and that's obvious this season. And Denver, Eric Law's been hurt. They're trying to rework in the entire Canadian contingent and become Team Canada. And you know what? Team Canada won the World Championship, and then you put that team together in the MLL. But the problem is Team Canada didn't win the MLL Championship. They won with the world rules, with that slow-down, deliberate, keep-away pace. And I don't know that that works in the MLL. I know it doesn't. I mean, the 60-second shot clock is not designed for a slow-down pace. So having built that team, is that a good thing? I don't know. I can't decide yet. I don't know how this team shakes up. But you look at Denver, and I still think they're capable of beating anyone in this league at any given time. I think they're a team that I would say has a shot to beat New York on the right night. So to say Denver is not like the others is absolutely wrong. They're still in this. They still have scored more goals than they've given up despite their defensive struggles. And they can still drop 20 on a Friday night or a Saturday night and make it look easy.
Yeah, I know that they can potentially on paper, but they still haven't done it. You know, I haven't seen them put up those kind of numbers, and their defense just it worries me. They don't look dominant, and obviously you lose a guy like Lee Zink, and that's going to change the entire way your defense operates, no question about it. But they haven't looked like the defense that I've come to expect from the Denver Outlaws, and they haven't had the offense that has been, you know, as potent as I'm accustomed to from this team as well. And obviously they haven't been whole. You're absolutely right about that. And maybe I'm being a little too harsh on them. But I don't see the way that this team is constituted, the way this defense has been playing, the way Jesse Schwartzman has been playing, I just don't see it. I've well admitted in the past that I'm not the biggest Schwartzman guy, and I'm not a card-carrying member of the Schwartzman fan club. But they're a team that's, I think, going to be tested just as, you know, they've got two games against the Lizards down the stretch. They've got to close out twice against New York. And who knows what New York will have sewn up at that point. But they've still got to play Rochester again. They've still got to play Boston again. And you know, that those are tough matchups for this Denver team. You know, Boston beat them to open the season. And it was 16-13. But it honestly, it looked like more of a victory for Boston than it did on the scoreboard. I'm looking to see what this team can do, how this team can bounce back, because Ohio really put it on them in that last matchup. Now they're going against Chesapeake this week, and that's a team that, you know, they had their best outing against. So maybe it's in the cards. It's a good bounce back game for them. But I just haven't seen it yet from Denver. Now, I want to look at the bottom of the standings. We're at the halfway point, you know, seven games deep into this thing, Tom, and you've got the Hounds and the Launch sitting there at 1-6. And you know, there's all kinds of buzz about the Florida Launch because, you know, they have Kieran McArdle, they've got the Thompsons, they've got Casey Powell, and they've got this ridiculous attack unit. But they can't stop anyone from scoring. And the Charlotte Hounds, you know, they've had ups and downs this season, mostly downs. I've talked about them at length about how I think that this midfield just has a lack of an ability to score. You look at these two teams, and we're only at the halfway point. But how close is the curtain for these guys? How soon do we call it on the Charlotte Hounds and the Florida Wanch?
Sunday. I mean, if you lose again this weekend and you go into All-Star break at 1-7, you're out. I don't know that you're statistically out of the playoffs or that you're technically eliminated, but there's no flipping that switch back. I don't see them breaking out after that. Florida maybe has a chance if that offense can get going, but that's a huge if. And if you're 1-7 staring at that kind of deficit when, you know, a New York team is potentially 8-0 or even 7-1, you're 7 games behind. And that's a long road to hoe. And even then, you're still 4 games behind the playoff spot. So they've got to do something, and we need to see a sign of life from these teams this weekend. Florida has all the offensive talent in the world, but I'm not sure how it gels. The Thompsons are incredible. They are worth the price of admission. I believe wholeheartedly that fans came. We saw some extra fans in Boston this past weekend because they were playing Florida and because the Thompsons were going to be there. I still think Boston is a tremendous draw, and that's amazing that they went over 10,000. But there were fans there to see these Thompson brothers. But I asked Kieran McArdle on the show, you know, do you ever ask yourself when they make these roster additions and just look at them and think, you know, I got this. We don't need this. And watching Florida the past two games, I think McArdle's role has lessened because you've had the addition of other players. And I don't necessarily think that's a good thing. I think McArdle has the chance to be one of the best players in the MLL, and you have to figure out a way to get him hit the ball and get him his shots because he is a volume shooter. Florida's defense is a mess. Queener goes from looking like a wizard to looking like he's not even standing in the goal. He's struggling. I don't know if it's time to make a goalie change. I don't know how their locker room operates and how the guys respond to Queener, but they're hurting, and they're hurting severely defensively, and you know, they struggled to score against Boston this past week when they have all of these guys that are supposed to be amazing, tremendous, lights-out offensive weapons. They look like a young team, and they look like they need to find a way to gel. Does that take 2 more weeks? Does that take 3 more weeks? Do they do that this weekend? That's what's going to be the time frame for them. You flip over to Charlotte, and I don't even know how to describe them. They're struggling. They're struggling bad. Michael Earhart, the guy who has been their best defender all season long and is a transition threat for them, is out till at least after the All-Star game. They're going to miss him severely. He was their best cover guy so far this season. They've got a ton of defensive midfielders that play great. I think Kevin Drew was probably my All-Star snub if I'm picking somebody. I thought he belonged with the way he's played and done everything they've ever wanted him to do this season. But their offense right now is Joey Sankey and everybody else, because he is the only guy on that offense that puts fear into any defense of any kind, and that doesn't work. You know, one of the questions that was posed of me this week by one of my fellow MLL friends was, you know, how many guys on Charlotte's team would start for another team in the league? And, you know, it's a tough question, and I can think of a few, but not as many as the answer should be.
No, you're probably right. I think they're definitely – I mean, I've talked about them at length, and I've called into this program, and I've been a guest on this program, and I've talked about them. There's issues, and you know, I think there was a lot put in a lot put into the attack unit on this team, and they thought the attack unit was going to carry this team. They thought that, you know, a guy like Justin Ward was going to be what they got the snapshot of in the second half of the season last season, and it looked like he was going to be able to make that transition into the MLL, and it looked like he was going to be able to be a guy that you could frame your attack around. At least that's what they thought they were getting with him. But, you know, after six games, he's got, you know, one goal. And is this the worst sophomore slump you've ever seen, Tom? Because I think it might be the worst one I've ever seen. After, you know, a guy goes out and he's over 2 points a game in his rookie season, in the games that he played in, to come out and be that cold. And you know, it just, and I've said it before, it looks like he can't handle a double team. And if a team doubles him, he doesn't know what to do.
It's gotten to the point that I feel bad for him. I mean, Justin Ward was a tremendous player in college. He came out and lit the world on fire. And then this weekend in the game, the announcer said, you know, you never know what happens to these guys in between seasons. Do they gain 15 pounds and get out of shape? Do they, you know, what are they doing all off season? Are they not even touching a stick? Are they not playing against top level competition? I don't know any of those answers, but I was very, very hard on him in the beginning of the season. And now, you know, they sat him out for a game just to see if it would spark him, to have him watch for a game. And it's tough. It's gotten to the point that I'm just hoping that he finds that form again, that he finds the magic again, because Charlotte is better when they're competitive. It's tough to watch them like this. It's tough to watch him like this. I don't want to see any MLL team be bad. I poke fun at them a lot. I pick on them a lot, especially since it's James's team and he roots pretty hard for them. But Charlotte needs to be better, not just for Charlotte, not just for standings-wise, but for fan base-wise, for everything. They just, for competition-wise, they just need to be better. And you can point to them coming back in the New York game and say how great they did and how they fought back. Man, that game was over, and New York knew it. They were down by way more than anyone should be, and they sparked this tremendous comeback and get 9 straight points with a bunch of two-pointers thrown in there. Well, New York had kind of put it on coast, and New York changed goalies, and, you know, Brady got shelled with a couple of quick twos that were very soft. It was tough. It was tough to watch, and Charlotte struggled. And, you know, I talked to Coach Spelina before the game, and he told me his guys were going to put it on him, and they really did. And that's not fun. That's not fun for the guys that are playing in Charlotte. That's not fun for the guys that are working their tails off for a Walmart-style paycheck every week to make this happen, and pressing to get fans and people to sit at the games in Charlotte and the Hounds Legion and all those people. It's tough, and everyone involved needs them to be better, and I hope they find a way to make that happen.
Yeah, I agree. Nobody wants to see a team, you know, be at the bottom 2 years in a row. You know, one of the things that's great about this league and, you know, that we talk about each and every year is the roster movement, the multiple ways that teams can get better throughout the year, whether it's picking guys up off of other practice squads, whether it's the supplemental draft, the college draft, trades. There's a lot of ways for teams to get better. And to see a team end up kind of in the same position 2 years in a row is tough. I agree with you there. And you know, there's guys down there for that Charlotte team that are busting their humps. And I've talked about that as well. You know, guys like John Haas, who made the All-Star team, who, in my mind, is laying it all out there and has overachieved to a certain extent. And congratulations to John Haas for making the All-Star team. He earned it with his play this season. I think he played above his head a little bit because he was forced to. And good on him for taking the opportunity and running with it. And hopefully, like you said, they are able to turn it around. Touching base on Florida, and you talked about them, and you talked about, you know, the whole Kieran McCardo aspect. And this Boston game was the first time that we kind of got to see the whole package, where you got to see both Thompsons, you got to see Kieran McCardo, you got to see Casey Powell, and everybody kind of crammed in. And you talked about how it's altering McCardle's game. It's also altering Casey's game at this point. And when you take a guy like CP22, who has been very good for you. You know, he was great for Florida last season. He had that a dominant season for a guy at hit that point in his career, and he comes out this year, and you know, he wasn't dominating like he did last year, but he was solid. You know, you're going out there and you're getting, you know, more than a point a game from him, and he's doing what he needs to do. Now you bring in, you make the trade, you have both Thompsons at attack, you have McCardo at attack. You're kind of juggling a little bit in terms of who's coming out of the box. And obviously, Casey's very capable of coming out of the box, but that changes the way your whole offense operates. And it changes the way, it changes the game for a guy like Casey. And it changes his approach. It changes what he's going to do, how he's going to attack different possessions, and how he's able to affect the rest of the team and affect the way the team plays. And you know, let's call a spade, Tom. You saw it in this Boston game. I think Casey had it probably his worst game of the season against Boston, and I think it's because of all the juggling around. And you know, mixing the whole "if it ain't broke, don't fix it." I don't think attack was the issue for the Florida launch. I think they needed some help at the midfield, and Steven Brooks is trying to do everything he can for this team at the midfield, but there's only so much he can do. Obviously, Casey can help there, but I think you're right. I don't know that at that point in the season it was necessarily time to turn it all on its ear.
You're right. You look at the Thompsons, and they are thunder and lightning. They are so talented, such amazing players. So they can do it all. They can do it all. I mean, Lyle Thompson might be the best collegiate lacrosse player to ever play the game. If he isn't, he's 1B to Mikey Powell's 1A. He could be the best there ever was, and I don't know that there's a debate there. And You team him up with his brother, and they know where each other is, and they have this sick chemistry, but they've never faced an MLL caliber defense or the shot clock or the 2-point line. And you drop them into a team that has some talent. Kevin Cunningham, Powell's going to miss him. Kevin Cunningham was not a spectacular player. I'm okay with saying that. He's an amazing guy, but he was I'll call him Mr. Okay, because if the coach said, "I need you to do this," okay. "I need you to do this," okay. "Can we, you know, you got to do this," okay. He was the guy who was going to do whatever it took to help the team win and get it done. He didn't need to take a shot in the game. He didn't need to get one shot for him to play a good role. He didn't need to pass for every single assist for him to make an impact on the game. He's a guy who doesn't turn the ball over. He doesn't make big mistakes, and he finds ways with his field vision and his ability to pass to get other guys in a position to make a play. And his off-ball cutting ability and finding space and being the guy that teams are willing to slide off of, those were all good traits. And I know now Florida is a matchup nightmare when the Thompsons and McArdle with Powell up top and Steven Brooks and hopefully David Earl is back soon. That becomes a very formidable offense. But step one is getting those guys in some type of a rhythm. And we've seen for two seasons now that Florida has difficulty getting everyone to practice, getting everyone together, getting everyone there a day ahead of time so they can put together a practice plan. And in exchange, you have what looks like a ragtag group of all-stars thrown together that have never played together. And that's what we saw against Boston. You saw a team in Boston play against a group of studs that hadn't played together in Florida.
Two Mikey Powell references in one program. I think that's a record here on MLL Radio and the Laxworm Radio Experience. We haven't talked Mikey Powell in quite some time. I think without argument, the most talented lacrosse player that a lot of people have ever seen, who just kind of lost his passion for it. I talk about these two teams with Florida and Charlotte because, you know, I think they've got the tall order in front of them, obviously with the standings, but you mentioned it. This week is huge for them. And they're going against who, in my mind, are the two best teams in the league this week. Florida takes on New York in New York, and Charlotte has to take on the Ohio Machine. So very tough order for both of these teams. And, you know, obviously we're not going to call any game a must win at this point in the season. But like you said, you go into the All-Star break at 1-7, and it's time to start thinking about what the plans are for next year. So this is a big game for both of these teams. It's going to be interesting to see the approach and how a team like Florida matches up and attacks a team like New York, who has really gone out there and won in just about every way that they can. They've won close games. They've won blowouts. They've gone into overtime. This New York team, in my mind, has passed every test you could ask them to in the first half of the season. And they've played situational lacrosse. And you and I have talked in the past, Tom, about how, you know, teams have to find different ways to win in order to position themselves for the playoffs. And New York is a team that's done that. They're a team that has won, like I said, just about every way that you could win in the MLL. And now they're going to go against Florida. They're going to go against a team, one of the two teams that they haven't faced yet this year. And Florida has to come up with, in a very short period of time, a way to find that cohesion. Because if they showed up the way that they showed up in Boston, New York's going to hang 30 on them, Tom.
Well, I mean, we saw what New York can do for three quarters against the Charlotte team, and I think Spallina's upset that they took the fourth quarter off. I believe that he will not let that happen again. I think the foot is going to stay, maybe not on the gas, but it's going to stay so that they don't allow a defensive lapse like that. They need to show that they can play 60 minutes of lacrosse in dominating fashion. And, I mean, it all depends on Florida. I mean, we all know New York can trounce them, and I think it's not going to be tough to say that that's maybe what we're all expecting at this point. But we could possibly see a Florida team that figures it out and is able to make the Lightning lacrosse. I don't know that Florida can stop New York from scoring. I think they're going to struggle with that. But if New York or Florida's offense, if the light bulb kicks on, maybe we find out if New York can stop Florida from scoring.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the pieces. You look at Florida and you just think that, you know, this is a roster that can score. You know, they should be able to put up 15, 20 goals consistently. It's going to be on the defense. You know, it's tough to stop New York, but no one's going to stop them. You just got to slow them down. They're going to need Brett Queener to be at his best and you know, or whoever it is that they put in goal. You and I have talked about maybe it's time to make a change, but they're going to need the best defensive performance that they've had all season, and they're going to have to go out there and figure out a way to score and figure out a way to capitalize on mistakes if New York makes any. And the same thing goes in the other game, Charlotte versus Ohio. You know, this is a game that we talk about every year. The two teams are linked together because they were expansion teams together. And the last time the teams met out in Ohio, Ohio put it on them. Now, you know, it was a close game in the end, but Ohio beats them. If they can go down there and get a tiebreaker on a team like Charlotte, you know, that's big. And Charlotte, you know, this is where if they're going to turn their season around and they're going to, you know, if there's one silver lining to the schedule for Charlotte, it's the only team that they've played twice is Boston. And if they can go out there and start winning, you know, some tiebreakers against teams like Ohio and teams like Denver and Rochester. And then maybe if you win those games, you can turn the season around, make a little noise and get up into the playoff hunt. But it starts this week. You know, you need this game against Ohio if you're the Charlotte Hounds. And it's, they've got to figure something out as well. And we've seen a flash here and there. You know, they put – I talked about them earlier in the season as a team that was going to struggle to, you know, score double-digit goals. They've been a little better than I thought they were going to be. They're right around the 12-goal-a-game average for the season. Although, you know, that 9-goal run or whatever it was at the end of the game against New York padded their stats a little bit. This is a team that's got to figure it out as well. They've got to get back to basics. And, you know, I feel like this is a team that has tried to do too much and has tried to overcomplicate things at times. Mike Cirino doesn't have the roster for that. You need to get back to the basics. You need to get back to packing it in front of Pierce Bassett, playing stay-at-home defense and playing physical defense, and then let the rest of the game come where it may. Protect your house and then go from there. Get back to the basics if you're the Charlotte Hounds. And that's what I've been saying since day one with this team. That's how I think they're going to be successful and how I think they're going to win games. You're not going to run and gun with the Ohio machine. It's not going to happen. And you tried that in the last game, and they were able to outrun and gun you. And that's going to continue to be the case with every team in the league, in my opinion. I don't think you have the horses in the barn to run with these teams. So you need to play a different style, and you need to play a style that suits you. You don't do what the league's doing. You do what suits you. And that's my advice to the Charlotte Hounds if they're going to turn it around. And again, it needs to start pretty soon and arguably needs to start this week against the Ohio Machine if they're going to be successful with that. Now, Tom, one of the things we talk about every year is unsung heroes, diamond in the rough type players, guys who were surprises and maybe you didn't expect what you got out of them. And now that we're at the halfway point and most guys have at least a handful of games under their belt, if you had to pick one guy that jumps out and surprises you in terms of his first half of the season performance, either for good or for bad, who would that be?
That's a tough one. A number of guys have, I guess, exceeded my expectations. We talked to one. Bunker's an all-star. I mean, it's a guy who, you know, before the season, we didn't think he was going to be the starter. And he stepped in. Tyler Fiorito, he's been absolutely tremendous. Another guy who's an all-star after not necessarily being what we thought was going to be the starting goalie for Chesapeake.
Didn't think he was going to be the starting goalie.
Yeah. So we've seen, a lot of these first-year guys, Davey Emela, who was actually asked to play in the All-Star game but was unavailable, which makes me feel good because I thought he was as deserving as anyone of being there. Chad Wiedmeyer stepped over from Ohio, was, I thought, kind of thrown in on that deal and cast aside, and he steps in and is a two-time Defensive Player of the Week. I don't know why he's not an All-Star, but that's back to a different point. But we've seen a number of guys step up and exceed their role this season. Back to the Charlotte point from previous, they actually activated Kip Orban, a midfielder out of Princeton, from their college inactive list. I think he's going to be a big difference maker for them. He could potentially be their best midfielder. He adds something to that midfield without ever having played for them yet. He's going to be a guy that Ohio's going to have to keep an eye on because I think he's a guy that can find some success in this league. And switching back to Florida as well, unbeknownst to me, which is kind of a shock because I didn't think he signed in the MLL this year, Florida, who apparently didn't have enough attackmen yet, activated Stephen Keough this morning too.
Oh, good. Yeah, because that's what they needed was another attackman, another crease finisher. That'll work out well. Interesting to hear. I think you're certainly right that Charlotte, if I was Wade Leaphart, I'd be activating every midfielder I had on the roster and looking at some practice squad teams, some of the teams around the league because – we've talked about the unwritten rule where you don't grab guys off practice squads, but there's some guys out there that I think would be an upgrade. And at this point, if you're Charlotte, what do you have to lose? Make some moves, make some waves, and try to make something happen. In terms of guys that have jumped out, you said Davey Emela, and absolutely he's a guy that's played with a chip on his shoulder. He's a guy that went out and, struggled to get a chance and didn't necessarily get the chance that he thought he deserved in past years on practice squads. He gets a chance early with Boston and took the ball and ran with it and has been outstanding for that team. I think the chemistry that he and Will Manny have and that they built early on in training camp and in practice and being together from day one was huge for that Boston team. And the emotion that he brings as well. I always talked about that being one of the big positives for Steven Berger on the Boston Cannons. Is he brought that emotional intensity to the attack unit. And with Berger retiring last season, Imala kind of picked up that ball for that team and has been that kind of supercharge for the attack and has really kind of brought the emotional aspect for them. And it's been fun to watch. I've got to see all the home games from the broadcast booth. I've talked to Davey down on the field a couple of times after games, and it's been great to see him have the opportunity and get the chance to show what he can do and have the opportunity to succeed. I think the Boston team, there's been a lot of that. I think with Imala, with Max Seabold, I think that he was, you know, a lot of people kind of scoffed at that trade when it happened. And obviously you weren't going to replace Paul Rabil, but Max Seabold has been very good for that Boston team and has been very, very surprising to me, I think. I didn't expect to get the level of play that Boston has gotten out of Seabold. You mentioned Wiedmeyer. Rob Emery is another one who I think has played very well for this team. And I was very, very critical of Rob Emery last year and had been since the draft pick was made. But he has played very well for the Cannons team. But a guy that, if I had to say, surprised me and really jumped out and stands out to me, it is a guy that I mentioned earlier. It's Steven Brooks. And he's a guy that, you know, is probably closer to the end of his MLO career than he is the beginning, you know, like Kyle Harrison said earlier. And honestly, I thought when he got traded to Florida last year, that was the beginning of the end for Brooks. I didn't expect to necessarily see him back this year. And he has gone out there and he's carried that midfield in a lot of ways. He has been the only option at midfield at times for Florida. And while they haven't got the results that they've been looking for, obviously, it hasn't transferred into wins. I think what Steven Brooks has done for that team and the performance that he's put out there and you know, going out there and carrying the burden and carrying the load at midfield as kind of a one-man show at times has impressed me and has stood out to me, especially considering that, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, been in the league, what, 6-7 years now?
Yeah, I mean, to pick out a guy from overall in the league that has impressed is difficult, because I think you could find at least one on every team. Brooks is a guy who is another all-star snub in my mind, and apparently the mind of the media when we did our votes. I thought he belonged. I don't know that he was available for the game or unavailable for the game. I just thought at this point in the season he's played very well for that team, and as you said, been forced to carry the load. But again, every team has a guy like that. I look at Jeremy Boltus in Rochester, who is an all-star, comes back from military duty and doesn't miss a beat, and has fit in exceptionally well as the catch-and-shoot guy opposite Jordan Wolf, and has played a tremendous role. And a guy who we haven't even talked about and is probably the biggest surprise addition to any MLL team at this point is Michael Bocklet. Picked up in an open tryout, the oldest of the Bocklet boys, the only one who hadn't played MLL before, and he's second on Denver in goals despite playing two less games than Drew Snyder. He's been phenomenal to the point that I think they thought he was going to be done. When, you know, John Grant Jr. comes back, you lose your job. And now Eric Law goes down, they're forced to bring Michael Bachlett back, and well, all he does is light it up again.
Yeah, no, I got the chance to see him when Denver was out here, and I got to talk to Matt, Mike, and Chris all down on the field, and it's just a great story. And, you know, I talked to him a little bit about how much of a motivator it was seeing his brothers win a championship. How much did that motivate him to go out to that open tryout and come trying and get involved in that? But it's an overall good story. He's heavily involved in coaching in the NCAAs, and this season he had the time. He's helping to build a new program in the college ranks, and so there was a lot of downtime this season before that program gets started. So he had the opportunity, and he took advantage of it. And obviously, I mean, you look at that that family, and they're one of the first families of lacrosse. You know, much like the Stanwicks, it's like everybody is super talented in it. And you know, between Chris and Michael and Matt and their sister who won a championship at the college levels as well, that just an uber talented team family. And it's good to see Michael getting an opportunity, getting a chance to showcase his skills. And I think that certainly, I mean, like you said, when John Grant Jr. comes back, you sit down. And I think that's true with just about – with 95% of the attackers in the league. You know, if you're not in that 5%, that's the top elite attack players. When John Grant Jr. comes back, you sit. And Michael fell victim to that, and it'll be interesting to see if his schedule allows him to continue to play next year, whether another team will take flyer on him or not. But certainly he has been a standout in the first half of the season, and we'll have to see how much of a run. Well, you mentioned the Eric Law injury, but we'll have to see how much of a run he gets going forward. That is going to do it for us as far as this edition of the Pro Lacrosse Faceoff goes. Huge weekend of games this week in the MLL. It's one of those weekends where you're going to get the opportunity to see action each and every day. And those are always my favorite. Friday, you've got a doubleheader. You've got the Machine and Charlotte, and you've got Florida and New York squaring off. Saturday, it's the Outlaws and the Bayhawks down in Annapolis. If you have the opportunity to get to Navy Memorial Stadium, do so, because I think that's going to be a great game. I think both those teams are going to get up for that game and have something to prove in that game. Then Sunday, up in Rochester, a battle of second-place teams. You've got the Boston Cannons and the Rochester Rattlers. 2 weeks ago, Boston edged one out over Rochester in overtime. So this should be a great game. 3 days of Major League Lacrosse action. Make sure you tune in here on MLL Radio and the Laxworm Radio Experience to hear those games live with better broadcasts and better calls than anywhere else, in my personal opinion. So check out at MLL Radio on Twitter and at Laxworm Experience on Twitter for all the broadcast information. They will get you the rundown on when to tune in for each game, who's going to be calling it, but make sure you tune in right here on MLL Radio. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For Tom Bovey, I am Tim Thomas. You've been listening to the A-Team of MLL Radio Reunited. Thanks to our guests, Mr. Craig Bunker from the Boston Cannons and Mr. Kyle Harrison from the Ohio Machine. Appreciate you guys coming on. Make sure you tune in next week for the Pro Lacrosse Faceoff again. Thanks, everybody.